How has Travis Green been in the past couple of weeks, and what's day-to-day for you like now?
Hey, guys. First of all, thanks for having me on. Obviously, like the rest of the world, we're going through some times that are that we haven't gone through before. And I'd be lying if I said it hasn't been a little bit trying at times. But I think probably everyone in society can say the same thing, just trying to do our bit to make sure that we're staying in and taking care of the people around us.
That's completely true. And there is a greater perspective to all this. I know we do a hockey talk radio show 2 hours every day, but you're right. There are bigger things that we're all going through, and that is certainly front of mind. And I'm curious, Travis, you're a 24/7 all-in guy. We know that about you, coaching the Vancouver Canucks. Do you find it hard to slow down? And I'm saying that assuming that you have. Have you slowed down at all?
I tried to explain it to someone the other day where, and I think you guys would understand where I'm coming from. Whenever the season ends, whether it's in a playoff game or it's at the end of the, you don't make the playoffs, whatever it is. And it's been this way probably since I've been, as long as I can remember, 15, 16 years old. It's like, okay, hockey's over. And you almost feel like just something's taken out of you. I call it a little bit of depression, call it you're down for, I don't know what you will call it, whatever you want, but it's for me, especially when I'm coaching, since I started coaching 12 years ago, I feel like I need a couple of weeks just to get off the mat a little bit when the season's over. When you coach, you feel like you're sprinting for 8 months and then you're done. And now it's like, man, what do I do now? It kind of happened that way when we were in Arizona and they pulled us. The game was canceled and we flew back to Vancouver and then sat around for a couple of days and then flew back. I flew back to my house in California and I got back here just felt like all the breath had just been sucked out of me. I needed about 10, probably took 10 days before I started to get more energy back. And now I'm really getting antsy and starting to work on some things hockey wise and get the ball rolling again.
So you're back in Southern California, Travis?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And your family's there. So we've been going through head coaches in the NHL and asking them to, trace their path, how they got to become an NHL head coach. So you obviously had a great playing career. Spokane, you were a big star. I love your draft year. You had 51-51. 102 points.
Yeah.
Whoever does that, whoever gets those the same. First round pick with the Islanders, had a great playing career. I had you briefly in Anaheim. Before I move on, tell the people the story. When I had you in Anaheim, you went in the World Series of Poker that year and had a real rough start, I think. Tell us that story.
You know what? Back when I played, I used to go over to the World Series of Poker and I played a couple of different events, a lot of smaller events, and actually finished 12th in one of them. And then I got into the main event. I actually played in a qualifying tournament to get into it, so I didn't have to pay my way in. I got felted almost in the first level long story short, it's a bad beat story, but it happens, and I was pretty disappointed about it.
Well, that's when you told me about it. You came back from Vegas. I said, how'd it go? And you said, Berkey, I didn't get one hand I could play. I got my ass kicked to the curb. Right. He wasn't there. You weren't even in there a half hour, you told me.
It's funny. That's the story you remember from that season. It's not the one I remember.
Which one do you remember?
Well, I remember crying when you guys were winning the Stanley Cup because I wasn't there anymore.
Oh, I know. I know that. I remember. That lost you on waivers that year, I think.
Yeah.
That's how you got to Toronto.
Yeah.
Well, our coach didn't like you. Blame him. It was his fault. Randy didn't like you.
Yeah. No,
okay,
I know.
So you finished playing, and tell us how you first got into coaching.
Well, I think, first of all, I've told this story. I did a presentation at the NHL Draft or NHL Coaches Association this past year and talked about coaching and my thoughts and ideas on it. And, like a lot of players, when you hit the age of 30, I started just thinking about it. How am I going to stay in hockey? I love the game my life. I don't, the 30 number seems like the magic number where you know you're on the downslope. And I was lucky to play till I was 37. And I got an opportunity to go to Portland. Was offered to be assistant GM, assistant coach. And I've got a lot of respect for junior hockey. Obviously, I played in it. You've seen what it's done for players over the course of time, but not just players. I did a dive and did my homework to see what I felt would be the best route to get back to the NHL as a coach or even into management. And, you know, I think like a lot of players, when you've played a while in the league, sometimes there's opportunity to be a third assistant coach for an NHL team. And, you know, I'd thought about that, thought about getting in development, but I knew I wanted to be a head coach. And I really felt that the best way was to go back and learn the art of coaching and then dive into it, take my time with it, make sure that I did it the right way. And I felt like the opportunity to go to Portland with a new owner, Bill Gallagher, who was really wanted to change things in Portland and build a winning organization, and also to work with Mike Johnson, who I felt was a phenomenal teaching coach. And I'd had Mike at the World Championships when I played, and I knew what a great teacher he was, and I really felt he would be a guy that not only is a great coach and a good person, and I knew him, but would also help me as far as learning how to coach. And you know, that was really the first step. And when I got to Portland, Mike and I came in partway through the season, and he just threw me into the fire and said, hey, you got the penalty kill. And as a former player, you know, everyone thinks they can coach and thinks it's easy. And when you get thrown into it and you're in front of a team saying, okay, let's go over the penalty kill. Trust me, it's a lot harder than players think, and the amount of work that you have to put in to do it and to perfect it. People, you hear it a lot in life. If you love doing what you're doing, though, it doesn't seem like work, and you'll do it all day. But that's really where I started, Berkey. Make a long story short, and my decision to go back to Portland and start there.
So you say that was mid-season, because I was doing my research last night. That didn't show up. You went in mid-season?
We went in. The team sold. New ownership in Portland was probably, I want to say October. I think the team was probably 10 to 15 games in. I want to maybe 20, because I remember our first game was actually in Tri-Cities.
Okay.
When Mike and I went in.
So there. So you come in midseason. Do you remember what you made your first year as an assistant coach in the Dub?
I want to say around $75,000.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, that wasn't bad. It was assistant coach, assistant GM. It was pretty good. I was pretty fortunate about it.
Yeah, and I had Mike Johnson in Vancouver. He was Mark Crawford's assistant, and he's a great guy. He's a great teacher, like you said. He can communicate.
Yeah.
He can communicate simple things, and he can communicate complex things, and that's really a gift.
Yeah, and Mike and I are still good friends. You know, and that's a decision I had to make when I was, you know, where do I want to go? What do I want to be? Do I want to be an assistant coach in the NHL, try to sit there for a long time, or do I really want to be a head coach? And it was a hard decision, but I felt like, you know, going back to junior was the best route. And I had to make another decision again when I was in Utica, because Mike got the head job in Pittsburgh. And now Mike asked me to come with them again to Pittsburgh. And I believe that year would have been, I want to say I had coached 1 year in Utica.
Well, let's stay with the progression then. Okay, so you finish.
Okay.
Mike leaves Portland. You guys get into a jam over some player-related stuff. Mike gets suspended. You take over, correct?
Yeah.
And that was your third year?
No, that would have been my fifth year.
Fifth year.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did you get from Portland to Utica?
Well, by the time, we'd had some good teams. Mike and, you know, I thought we worked hard. We'd come close to winning. we'd been there 5 years, and through the suspensions, I think it was a month into the season, I became the head coach that last season in Portland. And I'd slowly progressed to being associate coach with Mike. So the transition was fairly easy for me then. Mike had given me a lot of responsibilities over the years as it was anyway. We went on to have a phenomenal season. Won the WHL, went to the Memorial Cup, lost in the final against McKinnon and Drouin's team. Yeah, and it was a hell of a game. Again, a great season. It was, and now I'm sitting wondering, okay, what's my next step? And that was the year that Vancouver had moved to Utica. And I had known Lorne Henning, and I knew they were moving to Utica. I'd talked to Lorne, and they had asked me to interview for the job. And I went through the process of interviewing. I think it started with about 10 to 15 guys they interviewed. They got it down to three. And then they ended up offering me the job to go to Utica, and that's how I got there.
And who's the owner there and the GM there that hired you?
It would have been Mike Gillis, was the GM of the Canucks at the time, Lawrence Gilman and Lorne Henning.
And who's the owner in Utica?
Robert Esch.
Robert
Esch.
That's what I get.
Wow. A good friend of mine. Yeah.
He has done unbelievable job there, Robert Esch.
He really has. Robert was actually a former teammate of mine. Guy with energy to burn. And the job he did in Utica it's impressive. It really is. What he's turned that team into, the passion that he has into the team and the way it's translated to the city. It's really something. You go there and within right away, I think we had a record of, I can't remember the number, but 300 sellouts or something crazy, or 220 sellouts in a row. It was really something to watch what they did with that team down there.
I had Robert Esch in the World Championships with Team USA twice. I needed him to stop a few more pucks, but I loved having him. I loved having him on the team. He's a great teammate. Players loved him.
Yeah, he really is. He's a fantastic guy and a hard worker.
And tell us about the owner in Utica.
Robert.
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy, he's like I said, he works 24/7. He really wanted to build this this team into something for the city. And if you had seen pictures of the arena, just like 5 months before the season was to start, you'd never have thought that they could do what they did in that rink, the way they cleaned it up, the locker room they built for the team. Over the years, they've added suites and that to the arena. If you walked in there now and you were a guy that had been there 6 years ago, you'd just never imagine what the work that he's done and the rallying that he's got behind the city. It was a great place for an AHL farm team, for sure, with the passion in the city. The players really feel like the city's behind them, and I think that's important if you can find that in the American League. And it's got to be one of the best places in the American League to have a team.
Yeah, and in a 1,000-channel cable universe, it's minor league hockey is scuffling in it, but not there. He's done a great job.
No, he really has.
So you went to Calder Cup Finals with Utica?
Yeah. Yeah.
Who are your key players?
Oh, man, we had a ragtag group, just kind of a hard-nosed group of players that just everyone played for each other. Cal O'Reilly was our captain. Fantastic captain from a coach's standpoint and a player's standpoint. And we had Markey in goal, who had a fantastic season. I've been with Markey for a few years in Utica. And, we had guys like Kent Huskins coming out of the woodwork to play for us. We started the year, we didn't get out of the gate very well, and we added a few players. And this was a group that I was man, did I enjoy coaching them. I think any coach, whenever you go that far, you're going to say that. But this was a group that was not a star-powered group. But they played together. They wanted to win. They were prepared to do whatever it took to find a way to win. And it was a fun year.
Okay, so now Vancouver comes knocking. Tell us how that process worked.
Well, Willie was the coach. And
Willie Desjardins.
You know, yeah, and the year before, I had got down to the final couple guys down in Anaheim for the job in Anaheim when Randy ended up going back to Anaheim. And so now I was going back to Utica. And, you know, the progression of the season was Vancouver didn't have a very good year, and Willie was let go. And over the course of probably 2 months, I had gone in to meet with Jim and Trevor and Francesco. And, you know, I think a lot of people from the outside just thought it was going to happen. But I can tell you that, you know, it was thorough. They talked to me a few times. It wasn't like it was just given to me. They made sure that we talked a lot about my thoughts on the team, my thoughts of the future, how I felt we were going to progress the team as far as coaching and teaching with a young group and the way they were going and the direction they were going and understanding where we were at as an organization. And you know, I think that's important, not only from the management's point of view, but from the coach's point of view, that everyone's got the same kind of vision of where the team is at. And, you know, I wanted to feel that from my end, that management and coaches or ownership felt the same way that I felt where the team was going. Because I really believe that if the coach, manager, and ownership, if they're on the same page, people are going to do their jobs a lot better, whether they're the GM or the coach. And Berkey, I'm sure you'd agree in that, you know, if everyone's agreeing where the team is at, you're not going to make mistakes.
You have no chance unless what you just said is so
right.
True. You have no chance of success unless everyone's
right.
On the same page, unless everyone is thinking in terms of the same time frame of how long it's going to take, which guys can contribute, which guys you need to add to, which guys you need to replace.
Right.
Unless you have those discussions and you take the job as a coach, you're dead.
Yeah. No, and it makes you, if you start coaching out of, you know, fear or your job, I think coaches will run into mistakes. And I think I've been a guy that's coached with my mind and my heart and always tried to, you know, do what I felt was right for the progression of the group and the team. And obviously when you get down to crunch time and you're coaching to win, that's a different thing. But I'm talking long-term views and reactions, and how you treat a player can be affected by the honesty within your organization. And I really feel that's vital. So through the, you know, our probably 3 or 4 or 5 times up to Vancouver, you know, we settled on a contract and was offered the job.
Being joined by Travis Green, he's the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. Stewie, go ahead. You're with Travis.
Well, I'm going back to the poker here. I need some advice here because I may be losing my house to Daniel Negreanu. Any poker tips for playing him? And another question is, you played with the late, great Rusty Soleil. Who's the better poker player?
Yes. Well, obviously, Daniel's one of the best in the world. I haven't talked to him in a while. He's a huge hockey fan. And man, talk about passion. This guy's got it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Ruslan Soleil was, man, first of all, he's a really good friend of mine. You talk about a tragedy. You know, I don't think words can explain what happened there. And whenever you lose a friend like that, it's hard. But he was a guy that had a lot of passion for life. Loved to play poker in our weekly game that we'd have down here, and we miss him.
He's making fun of you a little bit, Greeny, because I told the story. You know how I used to walk to the back of the plane on every flight, right? And I asked the guys who was losing every night, and they said Rusty. So I told him I was yanking him out of the game. And he says, why, Berkey, why? And I said, because you're losing. They're cleaning you out every night. You're getting your ass kicked. And he says, sometimes I win. He said, it's my entertainment. Please don't do this. So
yeah,
I let him stay in the game. He loved
playing poker. And there's lots of guys that do. It's a good way to, you know, pass your time. You get a little competitive edge with it. And, it's amazing how many guys like doing it.
Well, and I'll tell you the footnote to that story. A year later, I see Joe DePenta, who's up from Portland in the American League. He's in the card game.
There you go, another guy. Yeah, he loved it too. I remember that.
So I call him back in, and I said, hey, you're making league minimum, pal. You're out. You're out of the game. Those guys all have lots of dough. And he said, Berkey, I'm making more in these games than you're paying me. So I let him stay in.
He was a sharp guy, old DePenta, and he was good at it too.
Travis, before we let you go, I want to ask you a couple of questions about your team this year. And we all have our fingers crossed that the game does come back, whether it's to finish up the regular season or right into the playoffs. Last year, Elias Pettersson changed the fortunes and the expectations of the Vancouver Canucks. I think we're all on the same page about that. Did Quinn Hughes do similar or the same to this organization this season?
Without a doubt. I very similar path. Or stories, I guess, or from my standpoint, when Elias came in last year, we weren't quite sure. We knew he was a good young player. Obviously, been playing over in Europe, so we'd even seen less of him. I was hell bent that I was going to try him at center. Mm-hmm. I know he'd played a lot of wing over in Sweden. Just watching video and watching his skill level, I felt like we had to give this guy a chance to play center. And a lot of it was because we needed a centerman bad, I felt. And I would say it took him a good rate all the way from the Penticton rookie camp through to the start of the season for him to feel comfortable there. But we were seeing progressions daily with how smart he was. And we all know the year he had. And then fast forward to Quinn Hughes. We got a little glimpse of him the year before. And again, you don't know right away with young players. You don't know how good they're going to be. I've talked openly about it a lot. I don't want to put any more expectations on players than there already is, especially in a Canadian market. I try to take it off of them, if anything, especially young guys. And, man, this guy came in those five games. His progression of ice time went from game one, 14 minutes. I looked down at Bomber and said, hey, I think we can crank him up. Game two, 16. Bomber, I think we can crank him up. 18, 20, 22 by the fifth game in St. Louis when they needed to win a game. So by game five, we were like, hey, this guy, he's pretty good. And so we had the summer to get ready for it. And again, when he came in his first year, a lot of expectations, especially after the five games. And a lot of people were wondering, okay, why are they not? We didn't even put him on the first power play. And, you know, there was a reason for our method to the madness. We felt like, you know, we could see it in practice. He's still trying to learn the routes. He's still trying to, you know, the breakouts in an NHL power play compared to where he was coming from. You know, there's a lot of different intricacies. You change on the fly, you know, little nuances, and he was still trying to grasp it, which we felt fine. And we really, the reason we didn't want to do it, we didn't want to start the season, him not quite ready for it or have it in his mind what we're doing, and then us have to take him off it. We didn't want the power play to struggle, him, and then to take him off of it, we thought would be detrimental. And again, you go back to expectations. So we waited five, six, seven games. You know, there's always a lull, and then he was ready. He was running his routes much better, you know, just the simple of walking the line in the NHL compared to college, and we put him up there. So, and the year he had has been, up to date, has been fantastic. It's very similar to Pettersson, a guy that we feel like not only adds to our organization, our franchise, but has changed our franchise and the way we look, the way we feel about our group and the excitement level going forward.
Just to, for the listeners, Travis, clarify who Bomber is.
Oh, Nolan Baumgartner, our D coach.
He handles the D. I had him when I was in Vancouver. What a great guy.
Yeah, is he ever. Smart guy, and we joke about it now. Where it was like
he's as smart as you can be if you're a defenseman.
Well, yeah, exactly. Good point. So that's why every game we joke about it, where I'd go, hey, I think we can crank him a little more. And, you know, and it was like you could just see it, 14, 16, 18, 20, 22. And now, you know, he's still learning on the fly, though, Quinn is. Defensively, we've let him play through mistakes this year. We've let him play through some turnovers. But we feel that we've got to let this guy and make mistakes to learn from them. And, you know, I think it's a fine line between stifling young guys and letting them play. And a lot of it has to go, the onus has to be on the player, where they've got to be smart enough to understand these mistakes and they got to be coachable. We've got two coachable guys that I trust as young guys that are mature enough to know that when I tell them something, they get it. I don't have to tell them 10 times. I can tell them once. If they make the mistake, I can call them in and I don't have to embarrass them. And they understand it.
And really quickly, I want to finish up with another name. And I know it's only been 10 games, but he came into your Vancouver Canucks lineup and started producing right away. Give us the coach's thoughts on Tyler Toffoli.
Yeah. Well, he's played well for us. He's been a really good fit on that top line with Petey and Millsy. You know, here's a guy that's won a cup. He's been in LA for a while now, and we were a little felt like it could go one way or the other. Berkey, you'd seen this before, where some guys have been in one spot for a while, and sometimes it takes them a little while to get going on a new team if they have.
Yep.
And we were a little bit worried about that, but we felt like if we put him with these two guys, they're good enough players that he's going to get his looks and he can score, and B, who wouldn't be excited about playing with these two guys? So he's come in, probably exceeded our expectations, played really well, been a good fit there, and I like him. I like him as a person, as a guy on your team, and he's a good player. He's strong on the puck. He can shoot it, and he's got a good mind for the game.